Alright, welcome back. We're not gonna wrap up the show quite yet, but in our penultimate segment, we have a new Versus edition. And this is the edition that I'm calling the nerdy edition, because it's about theoretical physics.
Oh, super.
And so in each of these contests, each of these rounds, I'm going to name the two things, and then you guys, or at least Melanie, you're probably not going to know what they are. And I'm going to do my best to explain them, and then you're going to choose.
Okay.
So sort of like, imagine if every round was dub versus dubstep. It's going to be that.
Okay.
Okay, so the first round is neutron star versus magnetar.
Melanie might be up on some of this, because we've been watching the Universe, the History Channel series.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
But I usually fall asleep. So.
Cool and boring.
No, I like it, actually. I like the show, but we always watch it in bed before we go to sleep, and I just get really tired.
Oh, okay.
So you'll have to tell me what those are.
Okay,
I do know about antimatter, just so you know.
All right. The coolest thing about antimatter is that when it comes into contact with regular matter, they call that process annihilation.
Yeah.
Okay, so a neutron star is sort of the remnant of a star that has exploded in a supernova, where basically matter has fallen back into the star, and it has condensed to the point where the atoms that make up the star's matter, they're under so much gravitational pressure that it forces the electrons into the center of the atom, which they call the something. Help me out here.
Nucleus?
Yes, nucleus. Where the electron combines with Jesus Christ, I'm gonna...
Protons?
Yes. Did I mention that I fell asleep at around 5:30 this morning? So basically all that's left, because the protons and the electrons combine together, they form a neutron. And so the only thing that's left are atoms that are composed of neutrons. This is something that is incredibly dense, but it's not quite at a black hole level yet.
Okay.
So some interesting facts about the neutron star are that if you are at the surface of the star, there's a sort of a differential in the gravitational force, meaning, you know, like the closer you are to the Earth, the more gravity that is imposed on you, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're standing on top of Mount Everest, you'll weigh less than if you're standing at sea level. So if you are standing on the neutron star, if that were possible, the gravity differential between sort of the surface of the star and 1 inch above the star is so great that it would literally tear you apart. Like it would pull that bottom inch of your feet away from your feet. And that would happen at basically every layer, every level, you know, up past your head. So basically you would just be completely torn apart if you were to stand on one of these things.
Okay.
It's roughly the mass of 1 to 2 suns, but condensed to the size of, like, Brooklyn.
Oh, I think we did hear about this thing.
Yeah, we've
did
heard
we,
about
Josh?
It. Okay. A number of times.
Okay. I remember that comparison.
I think they always say Manhattan, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Because of the nuclear physics connotation, I guess, that Manhattan brings.
Exactly.
Okay, so then a magnetar is basically a neutron star that has a really powerful magnetic field. And the magnetic field is so powerful that it's almost sort of impermeable. Where if the magnetic field sort of cracks at all, like in one location, it sort of sends a quake or a magnetic wave around the entire thing and lets off an incredible amount of radiation, of like gamma rays in every direction.
Okay.
So, and I want to say that the neutron star and the magnetar, at least I think the neutron star has been discovered. The magnetar, I think, is a theoretical entity.
Okay.
I think that's right.
So we're supposed to say which one's better?
Yes.
Okay. Who's going to go first?
How about... Melanie, how about you go first, since you have the all-time lead in versus okay. segments?
Well, I would say a magnetar because it has all of the perks of a what is it?
A neutron star.
A neutron star. But it also has a magnetic field. So I would say more is better.
Okay, Josh.
I'm gonna say neutron star, because it, while it can be a magnetar, it can also be other things, like
well,
a pulsar or a quasar. Well, this is basically this is like the opposite of your argument, Ani. So, whereas the magnetar is like neutron star plus, that's only one version of it, and so
I didn't know a neutron star could be other things.
Well, it could be a magnetar for one thing.
Well, yeah, but I didn't know it could be other things.
Also, I like, they always talk about, you know, like, if you have, like, a teaspoon of, magnetar, or, neutron star material, how heavy it would be, and it's like, the kind of thing that would, like, just sink to the middle of the Earth. And,
right,
just so... like a fun experiment, you know, let's see what would happen.
But so you could do that experiment on a magnetar also, because it would be the same as a neutron star.
Well, it'd be tougher to get material because of the gamma radiation and because of the repellent magnetic force field around the magnetar. So,
all right.
So I promise the other contests aren't going to be sort of as weird as this one. Well, they'll probably still be weird, but. They won't be sort of as ambiguous. I think this one is a little tough because, as you both sort of pointed out, a magnetar is a neutron star. So, really the question is, do we think that a magnetar is cooler than a regular neutron star? Or do we think a neutron star is cooler because it encompasses many different types of objects, right? And
I didn't say the thing about it encompasses many different types of objects.
Okay. Melanie.
Wait, did I win?
Hold on just a second. So, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for magnetar right now, and it says that, Josh, to go back to your point of, like, a small amount of material from, you know, one of these stars, what would it do? This is saying that a thimble full of magnetar substance, sometimes referred to as neutronium, would have a mass of over 100 million tons. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, sounds like a lot.
Yeah, 100 million ton thimble. So I think the main difference between a magnetar and a neutron star, and this is what causes the magnetic fields in the magnetar, is that most of the time neutron stars have a really fast rate of spin. And if they are sort of emitting radiation, that is called a quasar or pulsar, I think. Which we have seen, we've observed these, basically we can detect the radiation and we can see how fast the star is spinning. A magnetar, on the other hand, doesn't spin very fast, and I think that that slow rate of spin allows the magnetic field to form. So I'm going to give you guys one more opportunity to change your answers if you want to, or you don't have to.
I'll keep my answer.
All right.
Defiantly, but... I feel like there was something else. Oh, I was going to say also... Well, no, I'll just leave it. I was going to keep my answer, but yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So, Melanie, you win. It's magnetar.
Yay!
But, Josh, you get half a point because a neutron star is a magnetar, or vice versa. Magnetar is a neutron star.
That's so dumb. He has a built-in point just because he was wrong?
No, it's not because he was wrong. It's because the question was kind of bad.
That's not fair.
It's not?
You won. You should yeah, have a complaint.
You're up by... get a whole point ahead of you. I should get a point and a half.
Okay. Okay, fine. Melanie, you get a point and a half. Josh, you get half a point. Does that make you feel better, Melanie?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to the next round. So this is galaxy versus supermassive black hole.
I know the answer to this.
Okay, Melanie, since you're in the lead, you get to go first.
I'm going to say a supermassive black hole.
Okay.
Sounds way cooler. It can probably suck up a galaxy. I don't know. It's a Muse song. And those are my reasons.
Alright.
You should also mention the potential for puns.
Yeah.
On supermassive black hole.
Yeah.
Well, it just sounds dirty.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily a pun as much as it is just a punchline, a dirty sounding punchline.
Tell us how, what were the two things? Supermassive black hole and what? Galaxy?
Galaxy.
What makes a supermassive black hole?
Well, I feel like, okay. Josh, well, Melanie, your answer was supermassive black hole, right? Josh, do you have an answer? Before I go into the explanation?
I'm gonna say supermassive black hole as well, actually. I'm gonna change my answer before I've even made it. I'm gonna say galaxy because from what I understand,
they can have a black hole.
Most galaxies at the middle at their center do have a supermassive black hole, so they would then contain the other thing. So I'm gonna go with galaxy. Basically the same reason that I went for neutron star.
Okay, so now I'm gonna get into the explanation before giving you the answer. Josh, you are correct. It is theorized that every galaxy has a supermassive black hole in the center of it. Basically, the way that these things form is, galaxies are basically giant cosmological objects in the vacuum of space that are massive enough that, they pull all of the matter inward into the center, and that center has enough matter in it that it compresses and forms a black hole. Some of the black holes at the center of a galaxy are in the so-called feeding state, and what that means is that basically matter from that galaxy are falling into the black hole, and then sort of being ejected out of the galaxy as radiation. So what happens is stars or entire solar systems, I guess, will fall into the black hole, and that matter, as it gets destroyed when it crosses the event horizon of the black hole, basically gets converted into energy, into the form of radiation. So there literally is always a competition between a galaxy and its supermassive black hole. And my understanding, or at least this is my, I'm going to pose this simple thought experiment to you. If the galaxy is sort of being pulled inward towards the center, if it's sort of rotating about the center, on a long enough timeline, I'm pretty sure the supermassive black hole is going to win versus the galaxy. And so that is the answer to this question.
That's what it's winning makes it the winner. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yes.
there's literally, I mean, the galaxy is basically at the whim of its supermassive black hole. It rotates around it. If it gets too close to it, it gets destroyed. It literally just gets eaten by the black hole. So, the answer to this question is supermassive black hole.
Yes.
My defense would be then that it could be possible, I think, if I understand dark energy correctly, that if you had enough dark energy expanding the galaxy, then it might have the possibility of escaping the supermassive black hole. But then it would also destroy itself because it would be expanding so rapidly, so that might not be a justification.
Right. This is the theory that sort of the universe is expanding, and the expansion is actually accelerating, mm-hmm. And that right now it's on these sort of giant scales of physical space. But the theory is that once it has accelerated enough, it'll sort of go down to the galaxy level, and then eventually down to the sort of smaller features of the galaxy, and then to stars, and then eventually to planets and like physical atoms, where everything will just sort of at the very end just sort of fly apart from each other because this force that's causing the galaxy to expand at this rate is stronger than sort of the force of gravity, or even eventually will be stronger than the strong and weak magnetic forces that holds atoms together.
Right.
But you're right. If that happens, the galaxy will be destroyed. So, also, I'm not sure.
There are no winners, I believe.
Yeah. That actually raises kind of an interesting point because, I don't know what would happen to the black hole in that scenario. Would it stay a black hole or would it fly apart? My understanding is that once something becomes a black hole, it sort of can't unbecome a black hole. Like, stuff can't come back out of it. So, that's my scientific explanation. okay, so now we have our score is 2.5 to half. This is a really stupid scoring scheme. Okay.
Thank you, Melanie.
This one is going to be worth 1.5 points, just to hopefully even it out a little bit. This is Hawking radiation versus tachyons. And I'm assuming I'm going to have to explain this a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so Hawking radiation, this is named after Stephen Hawking. It was sort of discovered by him. Well, not really discovered, but sort of imagined by him. And then I think at some point later it was discovered to actually exist. And basically this is, there are these particles that exist in the vacuum of space that sort of spontaneously split apart and then form back together. And this sort of happens all the time, regardless of any particular event that's occurring. This just happens in space. these subatomic particles that do this. Now, this is related to a black hole in that, you know, once something crosses the point of no return of a black hole, which is called the event horizon, it can't escape again. So what this is that these particles that are splitting, one of the particles might fall across the event horizon of the black hole, meaning that it can't recombine with the other part that split off.
Right.
And so basically what happens is this other piece that gets split off in the form of radiation away from the black hole. So that's what Hawking radiation is. A tachyon is a theoretical particle that is able to move faster than the speed of light, and is therefore capable of traveling back in time. And that's all I know about a tachyon. Okay. A tachyon, this is the kind of thing that science fiction writers love, because it's basically space magic.
Right.
So your two options are Hawking radiation or tachyons.
Am I going first again?
Yeah, since you're in the lead.
You're always winning.
Well, my initial thought was that I was going to say tachyon just because it sounded funny. But there's a nice poetry to the Hawking radiation. It's like really sad. So I'm going to go with the depressing one and pick Hawking radiation.
All right, Josh?
I am going to say tachyon because of the space magic aspect of it, that it has a potential creating space travel that is faster than the speed of light, which would mean that, you know, we might actually be able to explore the universe at some point. And because I think that physics gets really interesting when there's the possibility of something going faster than the speed of light. So that's my answer.
All right. So, Josh, you are correct. Tachyons are sort of, even though they have not been discovered to exist, are.
Does he get an imaginary point?
No,
I get a theoretical point.
He gets a real 1.5 points. that has traveled back in time. So tachyons are exciting. Purely based on the fact that Einstein predicted that nothing with mass could approach the speed of light, right? So light can go the speed of light, but nothing else can. Mm-hmm. So tachyons are interesting in that they can go faster than the speed of light, but they can't slow down to the speed of light. Which poses sort of a weird problem with, like, if you're going to try to use this for space travel, how do you accelerate yourself faster than the speed of light when nothing can approach the speed of light? But I still think that it's a really fascinating thing. And also, it was used as a major plot point in that movie based on the graphic novel The Watchmen. Have you guys seen this movie?
Yeah.
Or read the graphic novel?
Yeah, we saw the movie.
Do you remember Dr. Manhattan? He was basically able to see the future as part of the superpowers that he had. However, it was predicted that in the sort of global nuclear apocalypse that tachyons would be created. And these tachyons, since they fly back in time, they're basically a form of, like, time radiation, I guess. They were blocking his ability to see the future, and also making him think that in the future there was going to be a nuclear apocalypse. But it turned out that one of the characters, the main bad guy, had figured out a way to create these tachyons without a nuclear explosion.
Hmm.
So I think that plot point was pretty cool. But Melanie, you're right. There is sort of an interesting, I think you put it as poetic, sort of connotation or situation resulting out of Hawking radiation. My understanding, and I could be completely wrong on this point, is that these particles are sort of almost created out of nothing. And basically these two particles are created and then come back together to form nothing again. So it's almost like a weird, almost like a separated at birth, but then in the end, getting buried in the same coffin kind of thing. And that's how you're expected to live your life, sort of with this partner. Very short-lived life. I think these last, like, on the order of, like, nanoseconds. But if you lose your partner, what happens in that case? This is sort of almost like a fundamental law of physics being violated. Except, obviously, it's not being violated. But still, I think tachyons are cooler for their sort of space magic properties, so.
Do particles feel pain?
That's a good question, Melanie.
You don't have to answer that. I'll just pretend they do.
I'm pretty sure you could get a research grant for that. It turns out, like, we can't do anything anymore because particles experience pain, and so just causing immense suffering by being alive.
Yeah. Okay, so I think the score is now 2.5 to 2.
Yeah.
Melanie, wait. I should have like subtracted half a point from you.
Yeah, that's right. 2.5 to 2.
Okay, so this next one is probably going to be. Well, I'll see if I can explain this. This is baryonic matter versus leptonic matter. And a baryon is basically normal everyday matter that you're familiar with. Like, it has mass, it has sort of electromagnetic fields that hold, like, the atoms together or whatever. Whereas a lepton, the only force that acts upon it is gravity, and it's a very weak gravitational force because these things have very little mass. So a baryon would be something like your neutrons, your protons, basically almost all matter that you're familiar with, whereas a lepton would be like a neutrino, which is sort of almost like, imagine a photon, except you're... Are you at least familiar with what a photon is?
I have a photograph in my pocket. My favorite photon.
Imagine your favorite photon. Okay. So a neutrino is something that basically moves like a photon. It's like a particle of light almost, except that it doesn't interact with matter very easily. So, like, it'll just pass straight through the Earth. Without touching anything, without touching any matter inside of it to change its course or to stop it. The only thing that really affects these neutrinos is large sources of gravity. So, so your possible choices are baryons or leptons.
Well, I'm going to say
leptons.
You get to go first?
Yeah, Is it who's winning or who answered the last question?
It's who's winning. Unless, okay, I suppose if you're not in the lead and you want to go first, you can.
No, that's fine. I'll let Melanie go.
I'm gonna, is it lepton?
Or lepton. Lepton.
Okay. I'm gonna go with leptons because those sound exotic. The other ones just sound normal. So, leptons sound special, so I'm going to pick them.
All right.
I'm going to go with baryons. Is that pronounced right?
I think so. I don't actually know how to pronounce these words. I just know what they look like. It's Baryon.
That sounds good. Because without them, we wouldn't exist.
Oh. Oh, Josh.
they do, in fact, make up the matter that constitutes us.
Okay, so the final answer, Melanie, you chose Lepton. Josh, you chose Baryon.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to spend a ton of time on this question because it's sort of crazy. but I'm going to choose Lepton because, Melanie, you're right, it's more exotic. even though a lepton is basically useless for humans, in that we can detect them. We do know they exist because we can detect them. We have like these big underground detectors where if a neutrino happens to hit like a water molecule in this big tank, there are these detectors that can detect the energy released from that collision. And basically there's like billions or trillions of neutrinos flying around through like every square meter of space, or every square meter of volume, even on the Earth. And the reason why they bury this thing underground, this detector underground, is so that it doesn't get detected by any other form of radiation, like light or like gamma rays or whatever. But neutrinos can still make it through and get detected in this detector. And I think the fact that these can just pass straight through everyday matter, but we still have like the off chance of detecting that they exist with our very material detectors, I think that the fact that we can do that is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty strange.
Yeah. Okay, so this is going to be the final question. And I think this one might be a little easier to answer than the other ones. I'm going to throw in a bonus question real quick before we get to this one. So, Melanie, you have 3.5 points, and Josh, you have 2 points?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to make this one another 1.5 point contest here. So, this is the the infinity of space versus the Planck length.
The what?
The Planck length.
What is that?
This is the theoretical minimum length that can be measured, or that anything can exist. Basically, nothing can exist smaller than this length that we have, that somebody has called the Planck length. I think it was discovered by Max Planck. Is that who that guy's name is? probably screwing that up. His last name is Planck.
Okay. Well, how small is that?
So imagine. Okay, you won't be able to imagine this.
Yeah, but it's so small you can't really you can't imagine it.
But basically, take a atom, and you know how, I don't know if you've ever had this visualization explained to you, but say that the nucleus of an atom is a tennis ball sitting in the middle of a football field.
Okay.
The end zone of the football field is where the electrons would be in this atom.
Okay.
Okay, so imagine sort of that length between the neutron and the electron. Imagine how tiny that must be.
Wait.
Even though from the perspective of the atom, it's a huge distance.
Where's the tennis ball on the football field?
It's on the 50-yard line in the middle.
Oh, okay.
So 50 yards away would be where the electrons are.
Okay.
Okay. Now, imagine, this is going to be, you can't imagine this part, but the subatomic particles, the protons, neutrons, electrons, all of these things are made up of smaller particles called quarks, which I don't know for certain, but I would imagine that the sort of relative distances of these things are probably about the same, where the distance between them would be, if they were the size of a tennis ball, would be about 50 yards away. So even smaller, like way smaller than like an electron or a proton, right?
Okay.
a Planck length is like a billion times smaller than that distance.
Okay.
It's basically the tiniest possible distance imaginable that's not zero.
Okay.
So, okay, so your two options are the unknowable infinity of space versus the also somewhat unknowable but finite smallest distance or length that anything can be.
Okay. Am I going first?
Yeah.
I'm going to pick the infinity of space because it has greater possibilities.
All right.
To infinity and beyond.
It's a lot more hopeful.
So I'm going to go with the opposite of that. Hopelessness. I'm going to go with hopelessness.
No possibilities.
And I'm going to say that I'm going to say the Planck length because while it is essentially unimaginable, it is also a measurable quantity. And so I think while our minds aren't really capable of comprehending it, it is something that you can build on. So you can like, you can put up enough Planck lengths together that you get like, you know, an inch eventually. And so that accumulation of all those lengths then, is something that you can do something with. So hope after all. until you consider the infinity of, that is the universe.
Can you measure the infinity of the universe with Planck lengths?
I'm going to say yes.
All right. Josh, you win. The Planck length. So the infinity of space is definitely interesting. And very cool to think about. But I also just think it's fascinating that somebody has discovered that there's a fundamental smallest possible thing that can exist. That's even smaller than anything that we know to exist. But that somebody has figured out that there is sort of a minimum limit on something about the universe. I just think that that's completely fascinating to think about. So that's why I'm going with Planck length.
Well, what if I'm morally opposed and I don't believe in Planck lengths?
That's fine.
What then?
You still lose this round.
The infinity of the universe, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think we're tied up now. I did that on purpose. Well, I mean, I didn't choose the answer on purpose. I posed the points in a way that hopefully it would come out that way, and you guys chose correctly. So.
All right.
So what are we up?
I think 3.5 to 3.5.
3.5 to 3.5?
Yeah.
Okay. So the final question of this this edition of Versus is the Big Bang versus the Big Crunch.
What's that?
So
it's a Nestle product, I believe.
So the Big Crunch is, remember what I was talking about earlier when we were talking about the galaxy and how there's sort of a force in the vacuum of space that's pushing things apart, accelerating the expansion of the universe. Mm-hmm. The Big Crunch is the theory that at some point, the expansion is going to stop and it's going to start compressing again. And basically at the end result is going to be that the entire universe compresses back down into the singularity that caused the Big Bang. Or to something resembling the singularity that caused the Big Bang.
Okay. And then what?
Who knows?
And then we do it all over again.
they call it a singularity because nobody can see past that point, so.
Oh, right. I think Josh should go first.
Because you've gone first on every other round?
Yes.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to say the Big Crunch. Because I think, that is the process, by which we might create another universe. And without it, then ultimately we would expand into the freezing, right? The world ends in ice. If that's the case, everything spreads so far apart and gets cold.
Yeah, they call they call it the heat death of the universe.
It's a little dramatic.
Well,
it's,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
the
it's
end of the universe, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the end of energy in the universe is what that is.
Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that with the big crunch, then we have the possibility of everything compressing back again to the singularity and then exploding in do-over. Universe, however many
like points. A mulligan.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Okay, Melanie?
Okay. Well, I guess there's no point in me choosing the same thing, so I will pick the Big Bang because the Big Crunch would kill us. Right?
This is, well, sure, yeah, it would.
I mean, it sounds like they're both going to kill us eventually, but like...
If you were there for the Big Bang, that would also kill you.
One is associated with dinosaurs, and dinosaurs are cool. So...
Okay, Melanie, you win with Big Bang, but not for any of your reasons. The Big Crunch would kill us if we were around for it. However, if we're around for the Big Crunch, that would be sort of a miracle of human engineering and ingenuity to have the species survive that long.
Yeah.
The Big Bang, nothing existed before the Big Bang. So if you were alive at that time, you would be God. And I doubt the Big Bang would kill you. but the reason why I'm picking the Big Bang, is because it's the thing that started everything. It's an interesting idea to think about that the Big Crunch might form another universe when it happens, but it could also just be the end of existence. We don't actually know what would happen, sort of at the opposite end of that singularity. And if you think about it, we sort of live right now in a window of existence between the Big Bang and the Big Crunch, if the Big Crunch is something that actually happened. And outside of that window, it's impossible to sort of predict what is out there. But we do know that the Big Bang happened, and we do know that it sort of produced the universe and everything in it, including us, including the ability for us to ponder things like existence itself. So that's why I'm going with the Big Bang.
All right.
So final score is Melanie wins again.
Yeah, even in science.
I should have given you 0 points for your answer. Okay, I was gonna bring a little bit of philosophy into this with another bonus question if it ended on a tie, but since it didn't end on a tie, maybe we'll save that for another time. Also, okay. We've already talked about the two of the three things that I said that we wouldn't talk about in this podcast. I don't want to bring philosophy into it, so. So we're going to take a quick break before the final segment, and you guys have been listening to Taekwondo, the Shame Chronicles. We'll be right back.